NCAA tournament. First NCAA tournament in Queens of the Court history.
Really?
Momentous occasion right here.
Is that true?
It's true, because our first season was WNBA of 2019. And then we did a season for the NCAA, but there was no tourney because of COVID. Then we had our third season, and this is our fourth, and it is our first NCAA tournament. Let's go. It's the Queens of the Court podcast. We're the King Size Queens. I'm Paul Jafrida.
I'm John Hanson.
And we're here today to give you an NCAA tournament preview. We're getting it in just under the wire. NCAA women's games begin tomorrow. And it is time for us to take a look at the bracket, take a look at the latest news, what's been happening lately in San Antonio, and come to you with some of our predictions, some of our upsets, and just really get into it. How's that sound to you, Johnny?
I mean, it sounds great.
Awesome. So why don't we start by just taking a quick stroll down memory lane. We're going to stroll back into conference tournament time and just talk about the different conference tournament winners. Okay.
Yeah, they're out there.
They're out there.
So what conferences, should we talk about the Big Five mostly?
Right. Yeah, we can. Let's mostly talk about the Big Five. Why don't we start with the ACC? It was the first one to, it was one of the first ones to complete, and NC State took that tournament from Louisville in the finals, which was a super exciting game, and I thought that was a huge win for NC State, and it is why they secured themselves a number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament. It was a super close match, 58-56 over Louisville. Sorry, I'm going to do it again.
Way to kill my question that I was going to ask you.
Oh, my bad. What was your question?
My question was going to be, do you think that win got them the number one overall, number one seed?
Totally. I think it does. So, I mean, the ACC is always one of the strongest, conferences. And I think that the other big wins on NC State's resume earned them, along with the ACC championship, earned them that number one seed. They may have gotten it anyway, but I feel like winning the championship and really solidified it. So that was big. Louisville got a number two seed, which is great. They're in the same region as, I believe, South Carolina is the one seed in that region.
No,
is that correct?
Stanford.
My bad.
They're in the Alamo.
In the Alamo regional.
They're the two in the Alamo.
Gotcha. My bad. It was Maryland is the two in the South Carolina regional, which is the hemisphere. Anyway, yeah. I'm getting ahead of myself. So, big accomplishment for NC State. That was a big win. Any additional thoughts about kind of like them and their chances come NCAA tournament? They are a number one seed, so
I have them going to the final.
Really?
I think their bracket allows it up until they go against Texas A&M, and I think they have what it takes to beat Texas A&M.
Mm-hmm.
And I think either South Carolina and Maryland are going to come out of the other bracket that they would play. Or would they play that? No, they would play UConn or Baylor, right? And I think they have what it takes to beat UConn every day of the week right now. I think the size difference there is what is going to separate them. I know, Olivia Nelson Adota is big and whatnot, but Alyssa Kanaan is just on another level of offensive ability.
She is. I agree. And I mean, they've taken down two number one ranked teams this year, and they have a great record against ranked teams.
So I was about to say they get up for big games. It seems like do. You know, it they seems do. Like they have, you know, some lackluster, you know, games against some opponents that they shouldn't have. But when it comes to they had
some missing pieces in those losses as well. Alyssa Cunha was out for that first loss against North Carolina.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get what you're saying, but it's just, it seems that their team really responds to the spotlight and the pressure and the, you know, seeing that other top team next to them. So I think if that's the case, I think they're going to really bring it.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you. I think they're super dangerous in this tournament. I think this is one of the first tournaments where they're going to have a lot of pressure on their shoulders. They've always kind of been an underdog in the ACC and come, you know, March. So I think it'll be interesting to see how they respond to being that one seed.
You know, honestly,
a new experience.
I think they either get to the final game, right?
Uh-huh.
They either get to that final or they lose next round.
Like real early.
The next round to Washington State, because Washington State has some people that could just go off.
Yeah. I like the prediction. Either they go to the final or they lose in the second round.
Yeah.
I like it.
Because I just think the rest of the bracket's pretty solid. You know, I think they match up well against everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think they give everybody else a problem in their bracket. So, like, you know, like when I look over at the hemisphere bracket, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maryland, right? I think could beat South Carolina any night, right? And I don't really feel like Texas A&M can like do something like that. And I think Baylor can beat UConn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Louisville could beat Stanford. I just feel like UNC kind of, or not UNC, Jesus Christ.
NC State.
It's just like they got it going on.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you. I think that they have the lightest region of the bracket. But before we get into that, let's just roll through the different conference tournaments. Let's talk about the Pac-12 next. They were also in that first week along with the ACC, and they finished early. Stanford really rolled through this tournament with no trouble. Every single game they posted a win of 20 points or more. And that's kind of an understatement. They won one by 34 and they won one by 39. So, they rolled through the Pac-12 with no problem. They earned the number one overall seed to the NCAA tournament, and they have looked like they've just gotten better and better as the year's gone on. So, you know, they're going to be, obviously, as the number one overall seed, they're super dangerous.
Are they the deepest team?
Like, are they the deepest team, like, bench-wise?
Yeah.
I got to think about it real quick, but yeah, I mean, I'd say so.
I like, the way I think of their team, it's just like...
I mean, they play, like, 12 person, players.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, every player, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, damn. Like, you're coming off the bench? Like, what the... Like, what?
Yeah. They have a lot of really good pieces on that team. A lot of talent. And you're right. You know, coming off the bench with so much help off the bench really just allows your defense to play tighter because you can kind of afford some fouls here and there. Unlike a team that maybe relies on their starters, they've got to be really cautious about foul trouble. A team like Stanford can really body you and make you work for it harder.
Totally. When you think about like the differences in like how Stanford is in playing 12 and like a UConn mm-hmm. that plays like 5.
Right.
You know, like you think about like they don't need 40 minutes from all their players. They need 25, like solid. Play as hard as you can every 25 minutes that you're in,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we have a good chance of, you know, dominating teams.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I mean, you know, like you said, they're in the bracket. On the other side, they've got Louisville, who's, you know, of course, a dangerous team. They were, you know, possibly, you know, going to get a one seed at some point or another during the season. You know, things didn't quite go their way in the ACC tournament. They dropped to a 2 seed. You know, that's an exciting matchup to look forward to if they both make it that far. There's a bunch of good teams, though, in the Stanford Regional. You know, you've got Arkansas, who handed UConn their only loss on the year. They're a four seed, so they could derail Stanford early on. You've got Georgia, who made some, you know, huge strides near the end of the season. They had a really good season the whole time, but, you know, they also, you know, played well in the SEC tournament. So this is a really interesting section to me. You've got Oregon, who, you know, coming off, you know, being the best team last year and bringing a bunch of pieces back from that team. So, yeah, I think that this will be a really interesting section of the bracket. And if I was Stanford, I wouldn't feel like I had earned a number one overall seed.
No.
Regional.
No, I mean, I think the Riverwalk bracket is the hardest one, but the Alamo to me is the next one. I look at, like, Northwestern is their 7. UCF is their 10. Like, I'm like, you know, South Dakota, their 11th
strong
seed. Like, it's a really strong bracket, and it doesn't feel like they really got, you know, that big of a benefit. Yeah, I guess going against Oklahoma and Wake Forest in that next game.
Oklahoma State, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, isn't too tough, that next round game for them. But then after that, I feel like, you know, it's a pretty murderer row bracket.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, for the one seeds, they really look forward to, like, the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight as, like, you know, their real tests of whether they can get out. And I think that Stanford has very difficult ones in this bracket. So we'll see. We'll see how that one goes. But but Stanford looks real good. So I'm excited to see them play.
Oh, yeah. They look great.
Yeah, I just can't wait to kind of see the tournament start and, like, get, like, the eye test of where all these teams really are, like, right now, you know, with everything that's been going on in San Antonio, which we'll talk about in a minute. Let's hop over to the SEC. The SEC conference tournament was a little bit more exciting than the other two that we just mentioned. Texas A&M came in as the number one overall seed, having won the SEC regular season in, you know, huge upset fashion. You know, South Carolina was definitely viewed as, you know, the team to beat here, and definitely. Texas A&M, you know, took the crown in the regular season and then lost in the semifinals to Georgia, which is probably what cost them a one seed, because they probably would have had a one seed if they had made it to the championship, even if they'd lost to South Carolina in the championship.
Totally agree. It definitely cost them.
And South Carolina rolled through. They won. Beat Tennessee in the semifinals, which was a little bit of a revenge match since Tennessee took them down during the season. And then they beat Georgia in the final by 5 points. So it wasn't a blowout victory by any means for South Carolina, who hasn't looked nearly as invincible this season as they did last season. You know, they graduated Ty Harris, who was their point guard, and it's always difficult to fill the shoes of a really experienced, talented senior point guard. So despite the rest of the talent on South Carolina, to me, they just don't look like title contenders the way they did a year ago to me.
So I wanna agree with you, right? And I partially do, but it looked like during that tournament, Aaliyah Boston woke up. And
she did, absolutely.
I would be scared if I was every team in their way because of what she did and what she, you know, she is that, like, she's the X factor. If she wants it, it seems like she could go off and be a bully at every moment, every second of the game. But it does seem like an effort thing to me.
Yeah, I mean, she's amazing. I mean, she earned AP All-American honors, first team honors as a sophomore. She's a complete beast, absolutely. And they need her to be big.
And when I say, like, when I'm saying it's the effort thing, it's like going from the fifth best player in the tournament to, like, the first best player if she decides to do it, like, play as hard as she can. She's that good. But it's like, yeah, there's times this year where I thought she'd taken, you know, taken some games off where you're like, kind of like, you could have dominated, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel that. I think they have, you know, not the most difficult bracket. I think that, you know, they have a relatively smooth road for them until they maybe hit Maryland. I think Maryland is a favorable matchup against South Carolina because of the way that team plays. They put up a lot of points. They like to move in transition. You know, South Carolina is probably going to try to slow that down and play that, you know, game a little bit more in the half court because that, you know, suits their defense better. But that would be a very difficult match, I think, for South Carolina. So
totally. I think Maryland's a tough match for anybody.
Yeah, they've been really under the radar, you know, the entire year.
I think what they do offensively is, you know, pretty scary. Mm-hmm. They put up a ton of points, and I'm looking at that whole bracket right now, and I'm just kind of like, damn, it's a soft bracket besides the Maryland. Like, they should stroll into the Final Four.
South Carolina?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, aside from the potential matchup with Maryland, I think even
Elite Eight, my bad.
Yeah, I think even if they end up facing UCLA there, I think that's a pretty smooth win for them, but I think Maryland could be tricky. And speaking of Maryland, why don't we hop over into the Big Ten Conference Tournament? Maryland, you know, were your victors there, really just no doubters. Their first matchup against Nebraska was the closest, you know, it was a 10-point match. After that, they really rolled through Northwestern and, you know, they crushed Iowa, who is on an amazing run, you know, behind, you know, the efforts of their freshman phenom, Caitlin Clark. That was a big, you know, kind of like, you know, run for them to go to the finals as the sixth seed. So, you know, really good on Iowa. They took out good teams in Rutgers and Michigan State, who had beaten Indiana, who was the number two seed. So there was a lot of shakeup in the Big Ten Conference Tournament, and I think it really affected the seeding in the bracket. I think, you know, Indiana maybe could have gotten themselves a three seed. You know, Michigan probably could have gotten themselves a higher seed than they are. They dropped to a six.
I agree.
Seed. So I think, you know, Maryland really, you know, rolled through that with no problem while a lot of other teams struggled. And I think that's just evidence of how good they are and how dangerous they are in this tournament.
Totally.
I don't think people are talking about them enough.
No. I totally agree. I think Maryland is super dangerous. And, you know, I'm a Terp fan, right? Like, it's only positive for me to see like how under the radar they're going, because like, I know like this team is dangerous. Like, I'm kind of surprised that they were, you know, like, I guess that they were put in South Carolina's region, but I guess like it made sense too when you look at the rest of the whole bracket on a whole.
Mm-hmm.
It is a lot softer.
I mean, if I'm Maryland, I'd rather be in South Carolina's bracket than UConn's or Stanford's.
Totally.
I think
those
are more difficult matchups for Maryland, but because of, you know, just the specific styles between South Carolina and Maryland, I think it's good for them.
Yeah.
Just the same way I think it would have been good for them to play against NC State. You know, both teams that really rely heavily on their post play, you know?
Yeah. No. Yeah, you're totally right. Yeah.
All right, let's keep it rolling.
But those are, we did the Big Five, right?
We didn't do the Big 12 yet. Let's cover the Big 12 real quick.
Okay. Let's hit it.
So really no surprises in the Big 12 with how this one went down. You know, Baylor ended up, you know, winning this tournament, you know, in relatively easy fashion over West Virginia, 26-point victory in the finals. They beat Texas in the semifinals. That was a strong match. And I think for me, the real story, you know, here is Texas getting to the semifinals and, you know, really kind of like pressing their advantage. I think that was big. They took out Iowa State, which I thought was going to be a very difficult matchup for them. And West Virginia really solidifying themselves as, you know, that second best team coming out of this region. And they earned themselves a four seed, which I think is really big for that program. So,
yeah, I was actually kind of surprised with the four seed there, not going to lie.
Yeah, I think they've earned it. I think, you know, they earned it in the regular season. I think they earned it in the Big 12 championship. I think that Baylor is so much more dangerous. You know, as a two seed, just no one wants to be in a region that has Baylor as the two seed, because I think they're a really dangerous team. They are every year. I think they've got a strong squad this year. They also have an AP All-America first teamer in Alyssa Smith. And Kim Mulkey always seems to kind of like, you know, handcraft a point guard, you know, at the, you know, who's not a point guard every year. And she's done that with Dede Richards this year, who looks like a phenomenal point guard now and passer and facilitator. So, Baylor. It's Baylor, man. They're the last national championships and are national champions. So, in essence, they're defending their crown. So, there's pride on the line there, too.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't give Baylor the respect that they probably deserve. You know, that's just me.
Why do you think that is?
I'm just not the biggest Kim Mulkey fan. Sorry, Kim. I just kind of, I don't know. I don't think that they play in the toughest division in women's basketball or anything. Well,
they
like
definitely
that.
Do not play in the toughest division.
I mean, like, I almost like for, you know, a Power Five conference, I'm just like, it's easily the worst Power Five conference. And it's like borderline with other conferences, like to me, in the sense of women's basketball, right? They're Power Five conferences for other reasons too.
I understand why you say that, but I actually don't agree. I mean, not only because I think Baylor is an elite, like, you know, top five team, because I do think they are that, but also because I think there are a lot of teams that are just like on the fringe, like on like of being ranked, that aren't ranked, that are really strong, strong programs, like Iowa State, like Oklahoma State.
That's yeah, sure, that's fine. I'm with you. I'm with it.
All right, let's keep it moving. All right, so those are your Power Five conferences. That's kind of you know, the highlights of what happened during tourney time. We're gonna talk real quick. I just want to do a full shout out to the All American, you know, honorees for the year. So the AP All America team, the first team, includes freshman Paige Phenom, Paige Beckers out of UConn, sophomore Aaliyah Boston. Dana Evans from Louisville, senior Dana Evans, junior Ryan Howard and from Kentucky, and junior Nalissa Smith from Baylor. So really strong first team, you know, Paige Beckers, Dana Evans, your guards, and then your bigs, Aaliyah Boston, Ryan Howard, and Nalissa Smith. Congratulations to those five players. They had outstanding seasons. They're very deserving. You know, exciting for college basketball that only one of them is a senior. That really, you know, bodes well for kind of the future of women's college basketball, and makes this year's draft a tricky one, to say the least.
Oh, yeah.
Second team All-American. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that draft is for a conversation.
Is what?
Is for another conversation.
Oh, because, totally.
Just because of how... What is it?
Yeah, I know, right?
Who I mean, is I think, the number one?
I think there are a lot of questions going into the tournament, and that's part of what makes it exciting, is that there's a chance for players to, you know, show what they got in this tournament and, you know, really improve their draft stock.
Yeah.
So, unlike other years where it felt like a foregone conclusion, like who was going to go. Anyway, let's quickly shout out the second and third teams. Second team was Alyssa Cunane, Nas Hillman, Ari McDonald, Caitlin Clark, and Charlie Collier. And the third team included Natasha Mack, Ashley Owusu, Michaela Onyon-Wede, Kiana Williams, and Chelsea Dungy. So congratulations to all 15 players. Outstanding seasons, very deserving players. Excited to see what they do, you know, in their continued college careers or in the WNBA, you know, in the near future.
Yep. Congrats, girls. Woo!
Cool. So before we kind of like, you know, get further into, you know, what to expect from March Madness and how this is all going to go down, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, the, you know, social media trending and, you know, just nationally trending weight room disparity between what's going on at the men's tournament and what was set up for the women in San Antonio. So Oregon's Sedona Prince posted a video to social media showing that the women's weight room in San Antonio only had a small set of barbells and one table. and that the men's weight room in Indianapolis, where they're playing their tournament, was just decked out, wall to wall with tons and tons of, top level equipment. And it really thrust into the national spotlight the disparity between the men's and the women's game. And this is an important topic for us to talk about, because this is partly why we do what we do, is because we want this to not be something that can happen anymore. And that's really just been the only, highly publicized part. There's been some other disparities as well. There was some significant differences in, the food that was available to the athletes and the teams, in the way they were doing their COVID testing, and all of it just kind of, shed light on the just disrespect that the women receive as compared to their male counterparts.
Totally. How could they do what they did and think it was okay?
Yeah. I mean,
like, what in their right mind thought that this wouldn't happen the way it did? Like, yeah. the reaction, the fallout from it, like, holy shit. Like, what were they thinking? Like, it's a mess up on colossal proportions.
Colossal proportions.
Just because if you think about, like, what has been going on for the past even, like, 5 years with women's hoops and, like, the bubbles and everything like that and money, and knowing that those things are a big deal nowadays, knowing that that's going to be a fallout point, it just shouldn't have even, the people that are in charge should not be around next year.
Yeah, no, I mean, I completely agree. I think it's shocking. It's like, the NCAA has basically said this was all a miscommunication. This was not, our intention to not put resources into the women. This was more a matter of circumstance, based on what was available in Texas versus what was available in Indiana, and that just, like, communication wires got crossed and things didn't get set up the way they intended to. Whether or not you buy the story, I don't even know if the story makes it better or worse. Like, we know that the NCAA was dealing with way more this year than they've ever had to deal with to get this tournament going.
Without a doubt.
That is still no excuse for blaming this kind of thing on miscommunication.
So I saw... It's crazy. I saw the retweet of it earlier. The way they put it, it was perfect. It's for the men's tournament, Indianapolis. We are so happy to have you. We couldn't be more happy that you're here. Here are all of our resources. Here's everything. And then for the women's game, it's you're lucky you're here.
Mm-hmm.
You're lucky that you're allowed to have this. You're lucky that you're giving you this. You're lucky that you get this. Mm-hmm. That's how it feels.
Yeah, I mean, that's a perfect way to put it. I hadn't read that or thought of it that way, but that's a perfect way to put it. And that's got to change,
Yeah,
like, the attitude has to change. Like,
you got to commend the response though, from every male athlete, every women athlete, every person that saw this happen was like, what the fuck are you guys thinking?
Yeah, this is ridiculous.
Are you kidding me? Like, both of these things generate so much money and so much viewership that it is, besides like your national championships for the NCAA, both the women's and men's March Madness tournaments are your biggest TV grabs and your biggest viewerships going. They are. Yeah. That's it. So it's like, to say that, like, here's one and here's the other and it should just be like okay is insane. It's insane. I don't understand how the programs themselves weren't more livid, right? Like, I'm kind of confused by the outcry was basically only like we only heard of it. I don't know what happened on the back end, but we only heard of the players being like, yo, what the fuck is this? Where were the coaches and the organizations being like, how is this what's set up? And like a day later, magically they have a perfect gym.
Right.
You know, like, and don't get me wrong, it looks great. I'm happy that everything got fixed, and I'm happy that, you know, all these things happen, but you look at it and it's just like the disrespect and saying that, but you heard their first response was, right? Was that it was a space issue. They told the players that it was a space issue, that they didn't have a gym.
Right.
And like, you're kind of like, yo, you could have three different courts here. Mm-hmm. What are you talking about? Like, what the hell? Yeah. I don't know. I could go on and on about this because it's just so infuriating that's, it shouldn't have never been a thing. It should have been organized the exact same way the men's was. Like, every men's and women's thing, for especially for college, should be organized the exact same way men's and women's tennis goes. It's the same tournament, right? It's the same thing.
Totally.
It's happening the same way.
Yep. You get the same primetime coverage.
Yeah, same amenities, totally. same treatment. Yep. Yeah, same everything. That's how it should feel.
Yeah, and, totally. I mean, the NCAA needs to be supporting student athletes. You know, that's genderless. That doesn't matter if they're men's athletes or women's athletes. And like, it shouldn't be a matter of, we don't have enough resources to do this for the men and the women. It should be, okay, then you split your resources to provide the same positive experience for all the student athletes. And it doesn't even matter, you know, which group of athletes is bringing in more revenue for the NCAA, because that has nothing to do with the athletes themselves or the students or how hard they're working or what they've done on the court. It has to do with viewership. And as a body that supports, you know, collegiate sports, they need to be able to say, we want to treat our athletes the same way, and we believe that all these athletes deserve the same respect and support that they get from the viewing public. And in order to help promote that, we are going to provide them with the same experience that we can down to the last detail.
Everything should just be the same. Like like I said, the especially for college athletes. Yep. If this is a pro thing, I'd be like, it's different, you know, like that's that pro organization, that's their deal, like how they handled it, right?
Right.
But as a student body, you know, this is about college athletes. This isn't like you guys. The NCAA doesn't. It shouldn't just be singularly there to make money. It's not. It's to put on.
Preach, girl.
It's to put on games for kids. Like that's what it's supposed to be, and like to give totally different experiences just because one's a man and one's a woman doesn't. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense, and like. Seeing that single rack of,
oh my god, it's so weights, embarrassing.
Seeing that single rack of weights and the table that had a like maybe seven yoga
gigantic mats open space.
Yeah, it's like that seven yoga empty. Mats. I'm like, are you kidding me?
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Like. What? Like,
get your shit together, NCAA. I know I know it's been a difficult year, but like, let's go.
Yo,
get it together.
Maybe they don't work out with like 100-pound weights the same way men.
No, but that
they work out the same way. They work out the same way.
If the assumption is that the women don't need as robust a weight room because they're not going to use it, that is even worse. Than everything else.
It's like
let's not even go there. I'll murder people.
Totally. And like
I won't murder anyone, I swear.
The outpouring of support from different athletes and organizations, in the sense of, like, you know, you have Dick's Sporting Goods being like, whatever they need, we got it. Whatever, like, we'll give you whatever they want. And then, like, you have these, like, fitness places being like, we'll donate everything. Like, let's just make it happen. Like, this shouldn't be a thing. Like, it's like all of these companies, it's, you could tell, it's like all of these companies would have loved to be a part of it. Like, why didn't you just call them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, they, it seems like if you would have just made a quick call, hey, you want to donate a few things for the women to use, and then, like, we'll make, like, a, you know, a national, like, we'll put you on, like, the banners and give you some sponsorship things. Like, that's it. It should just, like, none of these things even cost money. They shouldn't even cost money. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Get
it all out, girl. Get it all out.
It's just, yeah, it's frustrating. It's frustrating.
All right. Well, let's move on. Let's move on. We've vented. We've gotten it off our chests. We need to get to the bracket here, and we're going to talk and make some predictions and do all that. And it's really going to be an interesting year. We've had a couple players that have already declared their intentions to enter the WNBA draft, but it is not a straightforward year where your senior class is all going to go to the WNBA, since every athlete has been given another year of eligibility because of COVID. There will be a lot of question marks over the next month about who is going to go to the WNBA and who is going to come back, which is not only going to make this tournament interesting, but it's going to make the results of this tournament interesting to see how that impacts players' decisions with what they do with their careers going forward. So let's get to the bracket. We've got four regionals. Let's quickly talk through some of our top seeds in each of the regionals, and let's make some bold predictions. All right. So we're going to go with our final four predictions once we get through these top seeds in these brackets. So let's talk through the Alamo region. We've talked about it a little bit already. We've got Stanford as the one seed. Louisville is the two. Georgia grabbed the three seed there, and Arkansas took the fourth seed. So these four teams, they're all interesting teams with big wins. Louisville was the number one ranked team for a while. Stanford has been the number one ranked team. Georgia just pulled a huge upset over Texas A&M. Arkansas is the one team to beat UConn this year. A lot of really interesting teams in this bracket. Who is your pick to go through to the Final Four?
So Stanford's my pick.
Mm-hmm.
But the bracket itself is super interesting. And I think the journey there could be very muddled besides Stanford.
Okay.
So I think Stanford, you know, they do their thing and they make their way to the Final Four pretty easily, besides the potential Louisville game, Oregon game, Georgia game, not Oregon mm-hmm. game, Georgia game, you know, like, I'm looking at that. Arkansas to me is obviously a tough test, but I think it's their only test until they get to the Elite Eight. And then when they get to the Elite Eight, I think that the teams that beat up on each other mm-hmm. going into that game are going to have a tough time feeling good about themselves against Stanford. Mm-hmm. So I think it's an easy stroll there for me. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm picking Stanford. I think that they're going to get out of this region. I think the potential matchup against, you know, Louisville is tough. I think the potential matchup against Arkansas is also really tough. Arkansas is my dark horse in this region. If there's going to be an upset, I think it could be them, just because of their resume and what they've accomplished and just who's on that team, the star power they have. So I think it's going to be an interesting section, but I do have Stanford going through. I just think they're too deep. I think they're vibing, like, right now with each other.
Yeah,
I just think that they're going to carry that momentum. They dominated the Pac-12 tournament in such incredible fashion that it's hard for me to bet against them going to the Final Four. So Stanford for me as well.
Okay, cool.
Let's talk through Riverwalk. So Riverwalk is the region where UConn is your number one seed. Baylor is your number two seed. Tennessee, three. Kentucky, four. And just because I think they're an exciting team, Iowa, I'm going to throw in there as the number five seed.
Yeah, super exciting. I like this bracket is pretty fun.
Oh, I think so too. I can't wait to watch all these games.
I think every game here is like I'm just like kind of like after the first round, even I'm just saying like every game in that next round, I'm like, oh damn.
Yeah.
Like I'm kind of like oh shit, like you know, a Kentucky Iowa, like are you kidding me? Like that could be super fun.
Right.
And then like Michigan, Tennessee, Baylor,
Yep.
Virginia Tech, like you know, like getting that Syracuse UConn game, like either
Yeah.
South, and even if it's South Dakota State, like yeah, both of those matchups I think are kind of hard for UConn.
I mean, I think that Syracuse, South Dakota State's going to be one of, you know, probably the most exciting first round match in the entire tournament for
Yeah, I
me.
think I do think, and it's so sad to see Syracuse there because it's like,
It's a tough spot to be.
no, my whole thing goes to the what if with Notre Dame, because
Oh.
like it's like you could flip flop them out, and I would be like, okay, they're the same teams.
Right. Notre
Yeah,
Dame
so
missing the tournament for the first time
yeah.
since like 95 or something like that.
Like Muffet, basically since Muffet, you know, like since she got there. But yeah, this whole region is just so fun.
So who do you have going through to the Final Four, and who is your dark horse?
So UConn Final Four, Iowa Dark Horse, right? You know,
Okay.
actually, I wouldn't even say Iowa is my dark horse. My dark horse is actually Michigan. Because
I feel that.
I think Iowa has two really nice pieces and two scores that can get the job done against UConn. I don't think they have enough. Like, I just don't think the team is well-rounded enough to beat UConn. But I think Michigan is big enough and tall enough and long enough and old enough to beat a UConn.
Yeah, I like it.
So they're my dark horse, but Baylor can easily get out of this region too.
Yeah. No, this is a tough one. I think that this region might have just the most individual star power coming through in some of these games, and that's always an exciting thing in the NCAA tournament because you know one or two you know stars that just pop off and can carry their team can make championship runs because of how this is set up. And I think there are a lot
Totally.
of teams in this region that have that capability. You know, you talk about Paige Bueckers at UConn, Ryan Howard, you know, argue, you know, player of the year, you know, candidate, you know, year in and year out at Kentucky. What can she do? You know, what's going on with Naz Hillman at Michigan? We've seen her put up some 20 rebound, 30 point games. You know, Renia Davis at Tennessee is a huge star, and someone who's going to be trying to improve her draft stock. There's just so many big names. Caitlin Clark at Iowa, you know, Baylor full of big names. Melissa Smith, DeeDee Richards. It's
It's
a
as it's
really
it's a loaded.
exciting
This is
section.
this is this has to be the
The
most
loaded
interesting.
section.
Yeah, it is. It's the death region.
It
Like
is the region of death. I agree.
I look at it and I'm like, man, I would be fucking mad if I was these teams
Totally.
and had to be in this bracket because like you look at some of the other brackets and you're like, you could have spread it out a little bit, you know? Like,
Yeah.
I think there's some teams that are in this bracket that are not ranked where they should be, and could have been in different spots throughout this whole thing.
Yeah. So
But,
I too am picking UConn to go through to the Final Four.
yeah, I just think they have too much, right? You know, UConn
Yeah.
just has a little too much.
I just think it's almost just the pedigree of the program. You know, it's not even I think there's a lot to be said for expectation, and the expectation at UConn is Final Four, at least. You know, and so these players go into these games, you know, with that pressure to win on their shoulders. And that pressure can sometimes, you know, challenge players, but the players that go to UConn rise and thrive on that pressure. And so I just think that UConn is going to get through this. It won't surprise me if Baylor wins. It won't surprise me if any of these teams, you know, any of the top eight
I know.
seeds make
It's
big runs.
the one region that in this whole thing that I could just, you know, UConn could lose the next round,
Totally.
and then
Totally.
I'd be like, damn, you know, and this whole region could just get murdered next round. It's the only one I feel that way about, though.
I can't wait to watch all the games, though. This is the region where I'm going to be tuning in for the most games.
Every single game, I'm like, yep. I want to watch it. Like, edge, this is going to be amazing. Yeah, this is going to be amazing.
Totally.
Yeah. And even the games, like, I don't know if I really want to watch Iowa versus Central Michigan, right? But I do because I want to watch Caitlin Clark.
Totally. I can't wait to see her in this tournament.
But that's how much star power is in this one region, in the sense of that. Like, for Kentucky and Idaho State, well, Ryan Howard's on the team, so I fucking want to watch it.
Totally. Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, you've got the in-state rivalry, Tennessee-Middle Tennessee, 3-14 matchup right away. You know that's going to be a fun one just because, you know, they're in-state rivals. So, yeah, a lot of good stuff in that region.
Yeah.
Let's shift our attention to Hemisphere. Hemisphere is the region where you have South Carolina as the one seed, Maryland as the two, UCLA as the three, West Virginia as the four. So this is there's some other notable teams in here. There's, you know, Texas is the sixth seed, Oregon State is the eighth seed. You know, these are, you know, traditionally, you know, powerhouse programs that drop down a little bit, but you're always kind of wary of them a little bit. There's some other interesting teams in kind of like the 5 to 10 range as well.
Yeah, this is a fun one too. I mean,
tell me how you see this one going. Who are you picking to win it, and who's your dark horse?
So, picking to win, I am picking Maryland. Mm-hmm. I think Maryland's going to edge out South Carolina just based on points. Mm-hmm. To me, they score too much. Mm-hmm. I think they play good enough D, and I think South Carolina has a problem at that point guard position. And I just think that they're going to be able to take advantage of it, especially with Ashley Owusu. The rest of the bracket, I think, is fairly straightforward, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Texas might be able to do some stuff. You know, but I honestly think they're going to lose to UCLA that next game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really see any big upsets coming from this region.
That's fair. So I too am picking Maryland to come out of this region. I just like where they're at. I like, you know, you know, how they're composed. I think they're a gritty team. I think they've got a lot of shooting. I think they can give, you know, fits to anyone. But I think they're also a team that if they're having a bad shooting night, they could be in a lot of trouble. So I am picking them to get out of the region, but my dark horse is actually North Carolina. I'm picking them in the 7-10 upset for sure. And then I think they are a very dangerous team. They've got a young freshman class that is super talented, that has been, you know, has some big wins on the year. They beat NC State. I think that they have the potential to make a deep run. And when I say deep run, I really mean like Elite Eight, you know, style. I don't see them going to the Final Four, but they're my dark horse to really upset this section of the bracket.
Okay. I feel you with that.
Yep.
Yeah. That's, I mean, the Maryland. Yeah. I agree with you fully there. I just think they're too strong of a team right now. How they played in that Big Ten tournament was really like, it was eye popping.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, there's just some questions with South Carolina. You know, for me, they just haven't, they didn't really look that dominant, even though they won the SEC tournament. You know, they only beat Georgia by 5 points. They just, to me, haven't looked really dominant in their games, and they haven't like looked like they are in control. You know, as amazing of a team as they are, and no one would be surprised if they made it to the Final Four. I just don't think they're there right now.
Totally.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to Mercado, final region. This is the NC State region. So NC State is your one, Texas A&M the two, Arizona the three, and Indiana the four. For me, this is the clear weakest section of the bracket. Really, really top to bottom in those seeds, I just think, you know, are weaker than most of the other sections. You know, I'm surprised that Indiana held on to a 4 seed after their early exit in the Big Ten tournament. I think that that's, not a huge challenge for NC State as a 1 seed. So
Yeah.
Maybe the least interesting section. There's definitely some potential for some big upsets. But tell me how you see this one. Who's coming out of it, and who's your dark horse?
So, I think I mentioned earlier, NC State is my team to come out of here. Mm-hmm. I like their team. I like their, you know, their makeup. I think Texas A&M is probably the next best number two against Maryland. I mean, I know you like Baylor a hell of a lot, but Texas A&M just has so many top 20 wins. Mm-hmm. So many on the season. So I do think the 1, 2, and 3 in this region are pretty strong. Mm-hmm. But I think the whole rest of the region is pretty weak. And I wouldn't be surprised if Rutgers beat Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that there's some, you know, there's some fun games in there. Mm-hmm. But I think it's an NC State ride to the finals for me from here.
Yeah, that's totally understandable. You know, it's hard to disagree with that. You know, I think NC State is a really strong team, and I think they are likely to do very well. But I am going to go with an upset in this region, and I'm going kind of with a little bit of a deeper upset. I think that we're going to see Arian McDonald pop off, and I think Arizona is going to come out of this region.
So that's always been my if she does it, it's game over for the rest of the region, right? If she goes off, she has a tournament that she can have. I think it is. It's like she might be the scariest individual player in the whole region.
She might be. You know, she and Arela Garantes at Rutgers, that's going to be an amazing match to
amazing,
watch.
They
both make it out of their first round.
They're super fond, both of them.
Yeah, I think either one of those teams could make a deep run just based on their star power, but I really do like Arizona. I think they can give everyone in this region a difficult time, and while it might be more likely that NC State's going to end up coming out of here, I am going to go with Arizona, and my dark horse in this is going to be Rutgers, just like you said. You know, it's...
Rutgers is my dark horse as well.
Yeah. I just, you know, I think that there's just that potential they could come through. You know, they didn't play a lot of games because of COVID, but they're really talented. They had a good record, and don't really know what to expect from them against these teams.
I honestly think how that team looked in the few games I got to see them play, I wouldn't be surprised if they made it to the Final Four. You know, Rutgers being like, I think they are that is the roughest 6 seed out there, and might be the roughest, you know, over 4 seed out there, you know?
Honestly, all the 6 seeds are pretty rough. Oregon, Michigan, Rutgers, and Texas. I mean, that's a strong 6
line. That's a strong 6 line. It really is. And again,
much stronger than the 5 line, in my opinion.
You made that point about Rutgers like not getting to play a lot of games, and I think it did hurt their seeding.
Oh, I think for sure. I mean, I think the NCAA more or less said as much when the selection committee did their first reveal, and they revealed that, you know, teams that hadn't played as many games that maybe were ranked higher were getting lower seeds in their first reveal. So I think it definitely affected them.
So, I do think that Arizona-Rutgers matchup is going to be, that might be the matchup to watch in the next round.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah.
Like,
it's between them and Iowa, Kentucky for me.
Both of them. Wow. Those are going to be some fun games.
Absolutely. All right, cool. So we've got our Final Fours. My Final Four is Stanford, Maryland, UConn, Arizona. Yours is Stanford, Maryland, UConn, NC State. Let's talk about how we see this shaking out. I will go first. I think that Stanford and Maryland is going to be the match of the tournament. I think when these two teams meet in the Final Four, this is going to be the match that's going to be most exciting, most back and forth, really interesting matchup, you know, gritty, nasty, high scoring. And I think Stanford's going to end up winning it and make it to the national championship game, where they will face a UConn team that is just too much for Arizona. I think, you know, Arizona is a great team, but I don't think they can take down UConn in a Final Four matchup. So I see Stanford UConn as my championship game. How about you?
So for me, it's going to be NC State, Stanford, and Stanford take it at home. I think
I like your choice there, that NC State beats UConn. I think if I had NC State making it to the Final Four, I would pick them to beat UConn as well.
I get your thought process on those losses, right? Mm-hmm. I could see those matchups being a problem for those teams. So NC State, I just think, is a matchup problem with UConn.
I think so, too.
I think they have the clear advantage in that matchup. So I think they go to the finals. And it's honestly a surprise to me. I didn't feel that way coming into the year. Coming into the year, I was big on NC State. You know, I like them. But I did not think that they were going to be a clear-cut Final Four pick for me. Throughout the year, I thought, you know, mid-season, I was like, oh, Louisville, clear team in the ACC. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the year, I was like, Louisville is kind of like Dana Evans or bust. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if she's going off, yeah, they have a great chance of beating every team. Mm-hmm. But for me, NC State is just a little bit deeper. I think
they have a bunch of really strong weapons.
I think NC State gets to the final, you know, beating out UConn. And then I think, you know,
Stanford takes it.
I think it's going to be like a 68-60 kind of game.
Sounds good. I've got UConn Stanford in the national championship game, and I think it's going to be the Page show. And I think UConn's going to bring home their first of yet another consecutive 4 or 5 or 6 national championships starting this year.
You think it's going to be like that?
I think it's going to be like that.
Page, Ozzie Fudd.
And now they just signed Ayanna Patterson, who's in, you know, next year's class, who's a number 3 recruit.
I hope
that UConn is rebuilding for a long run.
I hope a young girl hears me say this. Don't go to fucking UConn.
right.
Like, just don't. Go anywhere else.
Sabrina Ionescu.
Anywhere else.
Be a Caitlin Clark. Go build a program around yourself at like another Power 5 school.
Men and women, stop going to Duke and UConn. Stop it. There's no reason. There's other coaches. There's other amazing coaches. There's other amazing programs. Yeah. There's other spotlights that you can shine on yourself and a program if you just go there.
Make it your goal to bring down UConn.
Yeah, UConn's gonna do its thing, right? It's gonna get its people, it's a wheel, right? It's just gonna do what it does. Uh-huh. They're gonna get their big prospects and stuff like that, but like, stop it. Just stop.
Yeah. Right.
there's no reason to keep giving them this. Like, Gino's not that good. No coach is that good.
Wow. All right. So thank you for the anti-UConn rant.
No, but I'm just saying, no coach is that good.
I mean, Gino's pretty great. He's proven it. You know, he's, you know, winning his coach in NCAA history.
He is the best recruiter in NCAA history. That is true. In fact, best recruiter.
Okay. All right. That's fine. I think that it is deserved, and I think he has done an amazing job, and he has you know helped shape a lot of young players, and he's done a wonderful job.
He's the GOAT, but I'm not saying that Mike Krzyzewski's not the GOAT either. No, Mike Krzyzewski
is not comparable to you.
Stop it. There's other programs.
Yeah,
totally. Stop it. Don't give them 4 of the top prospects in 4 years. You know, like,
anyway. I have UConn winning the national championship. I think they're ready for it. I think Paige is ready to take it. It's been an incredible year for her. I think that the rest of the players on that team
The rest of the players, that's my thing.
Rest of the players on the team are ready to be supplemental players on a national championship team. But okay. I think it is going to come down to Paige Bueckers. Behind Paige Bueckers, it's going to come down to a really strong team effort. It's not going to be any other individual effort. It's going to be, the incoming freshmen that have been really, impactful, Leah Edwards and Nika Mule. It's going to be, the senior leadership, the junior senior leadership out of Avina Westbrook and Nelson Adota and Williams but it's going to be all of that by committee behind brilliance from Paige Bueckers.
So I don't disagree that this is going to be a run for them. Mm-hmm. With Ozzie Fudd coming in, mm-hmm. It's a no doubt with Paige and Ozzie that mm-hmm. It's annoying that they play in the Big East and not a bigger conference because mm-hmm. they're going to stop people out for 4 years. Yep. Because does Paige get another year because of this year?
She won't. I mean,
she'll go. She'll go.
This past couple weeks. I don't know if you saw, but Morgan Tuck announced her retirement from the WNBA. And she is a very young player who has had problems with her knees throughout the course of her career. And she just kind of decided that, her body wasn't letting her do it anymore. And I think that if you are a Paige Bueckers, if you are a Caitlin Clark, you don't delay your pro career and lose a year in the pros because you want another year of college. You just don't.
No. In this day,
you go start your pro career.
So, do you think that changes the age requirement?
No, I don't think it changes. I don't think that's going to be an adjustment because I think that there's still enough.
I'm not saying junior year. I'm saying the 21.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's going to change. I think that there's still a huge and difficult adjustment between the college game and the WNBA, even for seniors that have 4 years of learning and growing and becoming a strong woman and more physically everything. And I think that is still so difficult that I do not think they're going to lower the age limit or change it so that freshmen, sophomores are leaving the NCAA on the reg to go to the WNBA.
So I don't think it would happen on the reg, but to me, there is three players that should be able to leave right now that can't, and they would be amazing. Probably
Paige, Aaliyah Boston,
Caitlin Clark.
No way. I mean, don't get me wrong. These players have done an amazing job, but you think these players could go to a WNBA team and be immediately a starter and a star?
Maybe not a starter. But I would definitely think that they would come off the bench and make a difference. And if they are drafted to the teams that are on the lower end, I do think that they would be starters and be in the position to become stars. I think
financially I don't think
Paige Bueckers went out this year, she'd be the number one pick and she'd go to New York and it would be her and Sabrina Ionescu and people would be like, wow. People would be like, oh my God, I want to go see these two play together.
Maybe.
This is sick.
Maybe. I don't think financially it would be worth it, to have to, because you're not leaving college to go play in the WNBA. You're leaving college to go play in the WNBA and overseas as a 19-year-old. Why would you do that to yourself when you could just stay and play in college for a couple of years, and just kind of figure out who you are? Because there's the whole college experience too that I know that a lot of the men don't care about that whole experience, but I think it's a good experience. And I think, up against playing overseas and doing two seasons a year, I just don't think that that's a better deal considering how much they get paid.
So to me, how they're going to get paid going forward, to me, every single time that you get a talent like a Paige Bueckers, Sabrina Ionescu, they're mm-hmm. going. They're gone. They're gone that third year that they could possibly go. I mean, sometimes I know that you have to stay for that extra year because you're a younger junior mm-hmm. and you're beat just because of where your age.
You're not eligible.
But I honestly think that the day of Sabrina staying for that extra potential of winning a national championship is gone. It's completely gone. I think it's completely gone with women starting to get a better paying in both overseas and here. There's just
especially
too much.
When you look at what happened to Sabrina by staying, she stays, they beat the women's national team, and then she doesn't get to play an NCAA tournament and compete for a championship. And you just never know what's going to happen.
And like, again, it just so goes like you just said with Morgan Tuck being like, I'm retiring.
Yeah.
You got to expect these women. Like, it's different. You don't have, as men, we don't have like, oh, we might take us 2 seasons off to have a kid.
Yeah.
You know, that's just not even a thing. Like, yeah. It's different for women. I think it's, you got to go when you can go now. And if you're a potential lottery pick, you have to go.
Yeah. No, good. I mean, I agree with that. But I don't think the rules are going to change. I think it's going to stay the way it is. And I think that, you know, maybe they change the rules so that any junior is eligible.
I'm just saying junior. That's it.
I don't think that'll
happen. That's the only thing that I think should change. The junior year thing.
It could, but I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. But we'll see.
Okay.
We'll see. More and more of those eligible players are leaving. Like, previously, it was a lot of that.
We're going stay back to your senior. Yeah, yeah, we're staying. So I'm staying all 4 years, no matter what.
Yeah.
And I just don't think that's even, like, a thing anymore.
Anyway, we hope that you are also playing along and doing a tournament and having a bracket and you know, hop on our social medias and, you know, share with us, you know, who you're picking and, you know, can't wait to hear from you and, you know, see how your brackets compare to ours and have so much fun with the tournament challenge and tune in for the games. Games begin tomorrow, March 21st. Make sure to tune in and root for your favorites and just have so much fun with it. And after the tournament is over, we will bring you our analyses and we will talk about what players we think have distinguished themselves for the draft. And we will really just get into it with you. So once again, like, you know, this is the Queens of the Court podcast. We're the King Size Queens. I'm Paul Jafrida.
I'm John Hansen.
Thank you so much for listening to us rant for almost an hour, or maybe even more than an hour, about the NCAA tournament.
We had a lot to talk about, and I'm a little drunk.
But we are super excited about the tournament, and we hope that you'll be watching along with us at home. So go out there and make a bracket if you haven't already.
Yas.
Bye.
If all of the kings had their queens on the throne, we would pop champagne and raise a toast to all of the queens.